Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mathis Media Hub Radio. You know, I'm so excited today. I was looking at this guy for, I would say, a lot of months, and I always thought about Gary Gibson, what he was about, how he got to where he's gotten today, and I've got him on. So Gary started some 40 years ago as a fine art painter, but with his natural design aptitude, quickly led him into the interior design field. He studied at UCLA, and he was fortunate to work with a couple of top design firms of the day. So I'm going to bring him on and let him tell you all about what he's been up to. Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good, Joanne. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Welcome to the show. And
thank
I know
you.
People, yeah, we're all excited to find out about Gary Gibson and how you got into the design business, how you started your store, et cetera, because this show is about people who are living their passion, and you certainly are.
That's funny that you say that, because today I had a ceramicist in the shop today that he's probably 30 years old, and I found him at a venue downtown here in LA, and
yeah.
He has such a zest and passion for what he's doing. And I said, I'm much older, you know, because I have done this forever. But it was the common denominator was the passion and love for the arts and what we do. And I'm fortunate in the last couple of years to be like a guest lecturer at UCLA, where I went to school, and the Fundamentals of Interior Design, which is the beginning program there, their four-year program. And it gets into all this dialogue of, you know, our pretty pictures of the work we've done with the store, the furniture, the design projects we do all over the country. But at the end of the day, it's like, I feel very fortunate to get to do what I love doing, and it's anything to do with the arts, and that's what's happened with the different entities of things that I'm doing in the furniture, with the store, and with the design. And the design was the beginning, kind of as a painter was the beginning of it. And it actually started when I was a kid, because I would collect. My parents are very, my dad especially is very creative, and so it kind of, I think in my DNA, it's there, but I never in the beginning didn't know exactly what route I would take.
Right.
So I always say to people, when you're starting, it's not that you have to be a painter, an artist, an actor. It's sometimes organic how your path ends up going.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think,
and you know, it's funny that you said, you know, when you were a kid, because I was going to ask you how it started for you. Was this a love of yours since you were a child, or did it happen later in life, or what?
No, it happened at a young age, and I don't think I think when you're a kid, you sometimes don't understand what this means down the road later. But I was fortunate to, I grew up, me and my brothers and sisters grew up here in Los Angeles, and we grew up with our parents being very into nature. We had beautiful gardens, and my dad was very handy with his hands. And in our bedrooms, we always, it was really funny because I always wanted to collect things, and not anything of real provenance. It would be like rocks or pieces of wood. It could be nails or screws, but it was just the creative process of collecting and putting things together. And I think in the big summation of what I do in interiors or the shop, it's this curation of objects to put together something that's of interest to people or stimulates them or emotionally, you know, makes them interested. And so it did start early for me. And like I said, it wasn't like, oh, my God, I'm going to be a painter. I'm going to be a designer. It was just, it was something that I enjoyed.
And it should always start there, something that you enjoy doing. So tell us about the painting. Were you going to be, I know you're a fine art painter, but where did that fit in, or how did that come
about? That fit in early on, right after I painted like from, I had a teacher, Mrs. Waldo, in my in the fifth grade, who introduced me to art. And I was fascinated with her. And in the days when school, public schools were so great, and we had art programs, and we had wood shop and metal class, and, you know, I always try to give back, and when kids are interested in that stuff, I really like to participate with them, because I was fortunate to grow up in that environment, which stimulates that in kids. You know, we get, you know, get math and English and all these other things that we need to know in the academia, but it's so much fun when you get to go to a wood shop or a painting class. And Mrs. Waldo, this fifth grade teacher I had, was so, we just connected, and it was like she took me under her wing, and we would do murals, like for Thanksgiving, we would do cornucopias and the Plymouth Rock and all the stuff, and then Christmas with them, and all these different holidays, and I would do these giant murals for the school, and I just kind of fell in love with it. And from that point on, through, like I said, metal shop and wood shop, electric shop, I was in stage production. And so this was early on, up through junior high and high school. High school, not as much. And then I went to an undergraduate college called Pierce College and took ceramic classes and painting. And that's where I got hooked on painting. And that's why I always say to people, just, like, try everything. And don't be afraid, because I was not, like I said, not planning on being a ceramicist, a painter, a designer. I was just experimenting and being exposed to all these different elements, and they all kind of clicked for me. It just made sense. And like I say, I think sometimes I think everyone's meant to do certain things really well. And I meet people that, oh my God, you're so good with reading or writing or being an actor or a singer. And I'm always envious when people sing, and I'm like, oh my God, I wish I could sing. You know, but we all have our own talents, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I see people, like I was watching the Tony Awards the other night, which I love musical theater.
Yeah.
And I'm like so enamored when I see like these people do these performances, because it's just like, oh my God, that's their passion and their love.
That's
and so for me, my route has been through painting. And so when I was growing up, I worked in an art store, and I would paint. And it evolved into me selling artwork. I met an art dealer who took me under her wing. I was, you know what, you're fortunate in your path through life when you meet certain people, because your relationships and the people you meet that help you are the ones that help, you know, make you.
Sure.
And
that's right.
It's so important. You know, like even our conversation now, it's like your interest in me, in your passion, for people in the arts and their passion is what it's about.
Right.
And it's connections that you must love what you do, because you can tell in people's voices when people are interested. And when I'm interviewed or in print or like this live, it's, you hear the tone in people's voices, and it's like, it's really gratifying. First of all, I'm flattered when people are interested in what I do, because I like to be, I'm very like social, but I'm not. And there's the loner, kind of the artist part of me that loves to be in the studio.
That's right.
So all of this combination is, I mean, I'll have moments of like, I need to be alone. I need to paint. I need to design. And you need the quiet time, but you need to recharge. But all of this comes with, like, our shop is so great because I get to interact with very interesting people. And we get people from all over the world. And so, therefore, the input of a movie director, an actor, just a plumber, whoever it is, it's all cross-sections of life. And the input I get or the information and conversations are so, it's like so valuable to anyone creative, I find. I think they're I think they're important for everybody. But I think people sometimes, because of their interests, don't listen to certain things. I'll, like, see something, and I'm like, and they go, well, where did you see that? Well, when we were at that studio, I saw those rock collections back in the corner, and I go, oh, my God. They go, how did you see that? I go, that's just observing your surroundings, and it's really important.
Right. Yeah.
So going back, and so back to the art and how I got there is, like I said, I was a painter, and I loved it because I could be in the studio, be left alone. And there's periods where creative people are a little more low key, because I think it's like a movie. When you make a movie, let's say you're on the set for 3 months or on location, and then you have to do the press, and then you have to do, you know, it's a cycle, and it's the same with creating product or art or whatever. I need my alone time, and then when I want to show it off, so to speak, you do an opening or you do a show, and then you get the accolades, hopefully, and and then you move on. And I'm one to, like, people go, you know, I look at the body of work because I've done this for 40-some-odd years, and I look back when someone asks for an interview or images, and I'm like, oh, wow, we did that, like, 25 years ago, and it still looks pretty good or whatever it is.
Yeah,
and you forget.
But that's being the artist that you are. I mean, that's art. It never goes out.
It doesn't.
Right?
And that's the thing about an artist and anyone creative. You always have to look forward, because looking backwards, I feel like I've done the work. I think artists are always very critical of themselves anyway. But I could have done that a little different. But if you like it, great. But I tend to always look forward to what I can do next. And I use this expression, which is horrible, but I get bored sometimes. And it's like, how can I be bored? But I have this great team of people that work with me and that help me run this machine that we've created of Gibson. And because of them,
You're supposed to get bored at some point. I mean, you can't be always satisfied. Getting bored is a good thing. It is, right? I think so.
It is. But I think the word, to say that I'm bored is kind of funny to say. I mean, how can I be bored? Is an absurd.
No,
people like,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It almost doesn't sound right that I would say that. But you get what I'm saying, is that it's like,
I do.
And it's just, maybe it's quiet time that I like, nothing is interesting to me until I see the quirkiest thing or a person talks to me. Like the ceramicist today got me excited because we're going to collaborate on some new ceramic lamps and stuff with him. Then it makes the creative process. It's like the juices start flowing and you're like, oh my God, this is going to be great. We could do this and that. And that's when it gets exciting. And so that's what I say when it's just kind of static and everything's going fine and it's just, okay, now what? But, you know, I feel really lucky, and I'm very grateful. I mean, I work really hard, but it's not really work to me. And I think that's the, I always say the public image of what someone does in a creative world makes it look, if you make it look really easy, then you're probably pretty good at it. Because I always look at people like dancers, and I'm like, God, they do it so, and like, I could never do that. So they're,
that's true.
Like, but that's their life.
Yeah,
you know,
that
and that's 10 or 12 hours a day of practicing and doing what they do. And, you know, so I do it in my terms, in my way, and that's how hopefully I get better at my craft. But the difference is, I think all creative people, and I think this is good, is you can't be totally happy with everything you do. You can do it, then you move on. And you can't, like, that's why I say I always look forward, because that to me is the growth.
Yeah. But you know what I'm thinking as you're talking, I'm going, wow, what a creative journey he has been on. And he's still journeying. He's still traveling on that creative path. So God only knows where you're going to end up, Gary, you know, creatively. And I think that's fantastic.
Well, I think that's the whole thing, is that I've been fortunate to work all my life in something I love. And for me in this world, you know, at this point in my life, a lot of people think about retiring. I have no need to retire. I can still be creative for another 20 years or as long
that's
as
right.
you know, so willing that
sure.
I keep creating until the very end. And so I'm really lucky that way, because I'm not in a career that requires physical labor to manifest what I'm doing. And so I can be in the studio. I mean, many, as we know through history, many artists, designers have lived very long lives and worked to the very end. So in respect, yes, I can keep going. I think the thing is, you allow yourself to go into different outlets. And for me now, it's like, you know, maybe we do some fashion stuff. Maybe we go into another area of design. I think the internet and technology has changed how we work. I'm getting ready to do a work on a collection of textiles that are based on computer-generated textiles. The designs are on the from the computer and printed that way instead of the old-fashioned looms and are woven, and the old printing techniques are different now, but because they're with printers like photography. So, and then we're going to work on a rug collection, which I've done a collection for many years ago. So there's so many outlets for me, and I like to stay within kind of the theme of home and lifestyle.
Right.
Because
that's
I believe
cool.
that, you know, I think the thing for me is it's important. One of the fascinations when I'm out is coffee houses and people working at their computers in a public venue. And I'm like, but I love being home in my environment because it's really nice. So I wonder,
right.
is their environment nice at home, or do they need the stimulation of people around them? Because they don't seem to be focused on the people. But I think your environments, because I don't think people put enough emphasis on their environments at home, be it as simple as a paint color on the wall, or the best chair to sit in, or whatever. And so anything lifestyle-oriented to me is interesting to create. And I think that it's important to have, you know, if you're going to sit at your computer all day, you want a really good desk, and you really want a good, comfortable chair.
That's
and so
right.
the lighting is important, and I don't think you need to spend a lot of money necessarily. I'm fortunate in the fact, sorry, it's a little noisy here today in L.A.
Okay. Yeah,
that's
all right.
We're fortunate in our interior design when we do projects all over the country is that we get to work with some very high-end clients that can afford to spend a lot of money, and that's really fun and creative for us. But I love when I have no money, because mainstream America, you know, there's the Targets of the world, there's CB2, Crate and Barrel,
that's
and there's
right.
so much great design out there accessible to people that. Everyone should be able to have a nice environment. You don't have to spend a lot of money necessarily. If
that's
you
right.
can, it's great. And so
right.
I love that whole wide range of demographics for design, because it should be accessible to everyone. And it's a hard challenge in the big scope of things, because there's far worse problems in the world than a beautiful environment, you know.
That is true.
But
Gary,
think
do you think that a lot of people don't know what they want in design? I mean, it's like, oh, I can't design my house. I just don't know colors, or I'm afraid of colors, or I don't know where to put this and that and the other. That exists also.
That's exactly it. They don't know how to do it, and they don't know what they want. I always, when I meet with a new client, I actually want to know what they don't like, because they really don't know what they do like. So if you kind of work from the other end and say, okay, so tell me three colors you don't like, and they can usually answer that pretty fastly. But if you go the other way, tell me your favorite colors, and they might not even know.
That's
or do you like a specific style of furniture? Well, I don't know. I never thought about it. And you bring up certain questions to people, and you're right. They don't really know what they want. It's usually what they see on a commercial, on a TV show, in a store.
Magazine.
And that's,
yes,
and that's the basis of, I like what's in that picture. Oh, okay. And why do you like it? I don't know. It just seems cozy. It seems relaxing. Okay, so then you start to get this dialogue. And good design, I believe, comes in. The best information that I get from a client, and then I translate in the design and presentation and in the end result for them, is that dialogue that I've had with them. And their honesty. You know, don't tell me you really like something, and you don't. And then we do it, and you go, that's not what I meant. And I go, well, that's how I interpreted it, and so I did it. And so I believe that people just, in general, sometimes don't communicate well. So it's a matter of kind of pushing people on their limits of like, well, you know, tell me really what you don't like. If you don't like that fabric I'm showing you, just, I'm not offended. Just tell me though, because
right.
I don't want to use it. And
exactly.
So it could be from that, the lamps, the lighting, the artwork. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to communicate with people. You know, when people come into the shop, let's say, and they really love it and it's great. I actually like the people that don't get it. And they go, what is this? And I said, well, it's a collective of things that we've collected and curated in a way that's hopefully presentable in a lifestyle that you would find interesting. And they go, oh, okay. Because that's the challenge is, not that I need everybody on board to like what we do, but I'm just saying it's more interesting to me to have a conversation why you don't like it than if you like it, you're already a fan. So I don't need to convince
that's
you.
Well, we're going to go to a quick commercial, and when we get back, let's talk about Gibson's store. I want to know about all the wonderful, eclectic, vintage objects, so on and so forth. So we'll be right back.
Great.
And for some reason, this commercial doesn't want to work, Gary. All right, so later for that. It's like, no, we want to hear Gary talk some more. You want to hear about this. Okay, let's just move on. So let's talk about the store. First of all, how did that come about? I mean, did you always want a store with different vintage objects in it and all this?
I always wanted a space that was a public venue to kind of showcase things that I liked. It wasn't necessarily a retail store, which doesn't sound right, but I guess I wanted a store, but I didn't consciously set out to, like, I'm going to have a retail space for consumers to come in. I see it more as an atelier, an artist studio, that this is my environment that you're invited in. So call it whatever you want, a retail space, which it is. And it's, once again, it's never been planned out by me. It's always kind of funny how things kind of fall in my lap in my wish list or my bucket list, I suppose you could say, of how I move forward with things in my life. It happened about 10 years ago, and I liked it. I liked the neighborhood that we're in, but I had actually was ready to sign a lease on another area where we had offices. But it wasn't right. So I went out and investigated in the neighborhood I wanted. And sure enough, I found the space. Long story short, it was a very long process to get the space, but I got it. And so I started out with 1,000 square feet in the beginning for the first 4 years. And then we expanded to, I think we have about 2,500 square feet, which now it houses our design studio for our interior and furniture. And then our storefront is all the vintage. And predominantly, I would say 80% is vintage finds, objects, art. It's from the full spectrum. And this is full circle how it is. Like, I have a rock, you know, I have my rock collection on my desk. I have old paintbrushes. And it sounds like, is this a junk shop or what is this? Is this a flea market?
No.
But it's a collective of things that inspire me, things that I love. I pick everything. Mm-hmm. And it's curated in a way that it's showcased where people can see it as a lifestyle, meaning there's something that was maybe from your past that your grandmother had, your aunt or your parents, or you grew up as a child, so there's old dolls or... Uh-huh. And I don't have a doll collection in here, but there's just objects, you know, and it could just be the doll head, and there's lighting, and there's a lot of art, contemporary artists mixed in with vintage art, and like I say, the key is, I always say, everyone could buy something, but it's how you take it home and put it into your environment, and it's so, the art of design to me is how you put it together, because
Someone
I get a lot of people...
That you have to... Someone once told me that you have to love what you buy. Don't like it, but actually love it. So that when you get home, and don't think of where you're going to put it, you know, while you're purchasing it or as a reason why you're getting it. Just worry about that when you get home. You love this item.
Correct. I agree with that to a point. But then the thing is, a lot of people buy stuff that they love that have no rhyme or reason in a continuity of an environment for them. And then all of a sudden they go, I have all this stuff, but it doesn't make any sense. But I love it. So there's a very fine line for me. It's very gray. Because then do you become a hoarder, or do you become like a curator of beautiful spaces? And, the problem is, it's subjective. If you love all the stuff around you, then it's good. Because I believe it's your environment, your guests. If you have people over and you have a weird collection, they have to love it. It's your space.
Plus, there's a conversation piece.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think it's all important that you do it for yourself when you do it. If you do it yourself, if you hire a professional or you work with someone, it's about you. It represents who you are. And so I'm fortunate to work with people that listen a lot and respect my opinion based on these long dialogues that we have about what your environment should be like. But it is, at the end of the day, it is subjective. There's no right or wrong way. I believe that there is something about good scale, good textures, good colors that are harmonious and based on the criteria. Like we have clients, they come in here and they go, I like this. I said, but it's not right for your house in the mountains. It's more of for like your house in the city. And so these are people that have multiple homes, like at a beach house. And, you know, you're not going to put certain lighting or certain things at the beach. And it could be strictly based on the climate because salt air will rust out steel. But you have to use stainless steel at the beach because it doesn't rust.
Okay.
So there's certain things that I have to make people aware of to make sure that they like it 10 years down the road.
Yeah.
So the store is like my little baby that I love being in. In fact, my desk is a giant 6-foot square wood table with a collection of a bunch of stuff on it. And I sit in the middle of the environment, in the corner of it, and I get to sit amongst all of this. So it's like working in a studio. So I'm very fortunate that way. And then I have I have a studio up in Oregon that I get to paint at.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I mean, what more can you ask for, Gary? What a creative journey you've been on. And as I said before, you're still on because who knows where you're going to wind up. And I think that's fantastic. That's encouraging for people to listen to that. And I want to thank you. You know what? Our 30 minutes are just about up in 1 minute and 54.
Are you kidding?
Can you believe? Nope.
No way.
That was, yeah.
I feel like we could be talking forever, Joanne.
Exactly. But it was so real. It was so much fun. Thank you for sharing your passion
with us.
And I'm sure that people who have their passion of whatever they feel about or their journey have gotten inspired from you. So there you go. Yeah,
well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
It's been fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it has been. Thank you for coming on. If there's anything new, which I'm certain that there will be, come back on the show and tell us about it, okay?
I will. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much. All right.
All right.
Take care.
Take care. Thank you for listening to Gary Gibson talk about his interior design business, talk about his studio, which sounds absolutely fabulous, and the things that he lives at. Oh, actually, you can the things for sale. I wanted to talk to him about that. I forgot. And rental at his studio as well. And I believe it's called Gibson Studio. And so look him up and go there and visit. I think I'm going to do that once I get to California. So there you go. All right. Take care and have a wonderful rest. Absolutely. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.